Welcome to the Eat the Evidence podcast, a show for cake and cookie decorators and sugar artists of all kinds. I'm your host, Kimberly Chapman, and this is episode number 44 on July 11th, 2019. On this episode, Becca Makris of Macarons & More joins me to talk about her method for macaron baking, the trials and tribulations of Facebook baking groups, and the journey she went through to become a licensed home baker in California. So whether you're baking from your own home kitchen, working in a busy commercial kitchen, or riding the teaching and sugar arts show circuit to empower others to make their own edible art, let's get this show started to educate and entertain you while you get the job done. Joining me now is Becca Makris of Macarons & More from Livermore, California. Welcome, Becca.
Oh, thank you. Glad to be here.
How are you doing?
Good. Just gearing up to make some more macarons later today.
And we should start off by saying they are macarons. They are not macaroons.
Correct.
Because
they are not macaroons.
We have shared that rant.
Yes, everywhere I go. And then people ask me, wait, am I saying it wrong? And you don't want to correct people. You feel like, oh, like, and then I'm like, well, yeah, kind of.
Oh, no, I'll correct people.
Yeah.
Like, because it came up, I know we were talking about it when I was watching the old Bake Off episodes. Yeah. And Paul Hollywood, who is a man who's making a living on correcting other people about baking, and he kept, when they were doing on Bake Off, and he kept saying macaroons, but then they clearly were making macarons. And I'm like, that's the wrong thing. And macarons have a major allergen in them, and macaroons have a different major allergen in them, like depending on. Yeah, but yeah.
Right.
So like, so when I posted about it and all these people were like, you can use them interchangeably. I'm like, oh, hell no, you can't.
Yeah, no. And some people say you can, like they're like, well, it's both. And I'm like, no, you are incorrect.
Yeah.
A macaroon is a different thing than a macaron.
Right. Which is in that meme. And then President Macron is someone thing even different still. Yes.
Correct.
And he is made with neither almonds or coconuts.
Yes.
As far as we know.
Completely different variants.
Yes. But, okay, so why don't you talk about what you make and your process, because people are often really scared of them.
Oh, so I make macarons, and I also do cupcakes and stuff like that, but my main part of my business is macarons, and I started back, like, a year ago, just messed around. I saw, like, a Tasty video, and I was like, I could do that, and I made my first batch, and they didn't come out perfect, and they were wrinkly and they didn't really have feet. And what are feet? Why are we talking about feet with cookies? So a macaron develops kind of a hard shell when you're quote unquote letting it dry or rest. And when it bakes up instead of out, and it with it grows these little tiny feet at the bottom of the cookie. And then you'll get like a smooth kind of shell at the top. And so I didn't have any of that. I was like, well, maybe this is harder than I thought. Then I cooked them one more time and I nailed it. And I was like, all right, that's not that bad. And shortly after that, I started like rapid fire, just practicing and practicing. You know, you whip meringue. There was like this whole process. I sift my almond flour, my powdered sugar three times. Because if I didn't sift it three times, it just wasn't fine enough.
Wow.
And, you know, use your egg whites at room temperature, because if you use them cold, then the meringue didn't whip just right. And I weigh everything with a scale to the gram, and it's all very precise, whereas normally with baking, I kind of, oh, I'll do this with a little bit of that. Yeah, I'm not going to measure this. Mm-hmm. But with macarons, I soon realized we have to be, like, super on the nose with everything.
So how does that affect the flavoring, or is the flavoring all just, I don't eat them very much because it's really sweet for me, but is the flavoring, because you have all these different flavors, is that just in the filling or in the cookie itself?
Some people just flavor their filling because they're really nervous to mess with the shell, the actual cookie part, because they're so finicky. I flavor the shells. So I flavor my filling and I flavor my shells. I have a coffee grinder here and I can grind up anything. I've done like yeah, seriously. I've put Heath bars in there, and I've put them inside my macaron shell. I've done bacon, where I just bake it and let it get very crunchy, and then I grind it up to sprinkle inside my cookies, and then coffee and, like, Nesquik powder. Of course, those are already powdery things, but they have to be so fine for this cookie that I have to grind them even more. And then I use a bunch of extracts. Like I probably have 40 maybe flavors, because I can mix just a little bit of extract to give that cookie that flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much how I do, how I flavor my shells. And then in California, you know, home bakers, we're not allowed to use stuff that is not shelf stable. So I can't use like jams or curds or anything like that. So I have to be super careful. I can grind up. I can use dried, like freeze dried fruits.
Right.
Because those are shelf stable. But most of the time I either do a Swiss meringue buttercream or I do an American buttercream. And then I just flavor it and color it all from there.
Right. Well, and I saw, hang on, it was on your page because there was, people were drooling over it. It was, the Bailey's salted caramel candy. So you were like melting down the candies and.
There's this stuff called amaretti, which is a flavoring. And, gosh, I forget where they make it, but they sell it by like the jar, and you put it in like your buttercream and the flavoring is just right on. It doesn't taste fake or artificial. So I've started using that. Because it's just so much easier. You hardly have to use any, and you can just drizzle it in and then stir it up, and it tastes great.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
So, and you sell these. It's not just like you're a stay-at-home mom, but you've made a whole business of this, selling these.
Right. Yeah, I have made a whole business where I do events in California. Having this license allows me to go to, like, farmers markets and sell. I do a lot of, like, sip-in shops where, you know, people are fundraising for some event, and then they host this, like, sippin' shop thing at wineries. Livermore has a ton of wineries. So I do a lot of that kind of stuff. And then I do a lot of personal orders.
Right. And every time you post them, I mean, because they look pretty. I mean, aside from even looking pretty, you get so many comments on there of, we all get those comments of, I want some, and then half those people never buy. But you clearly have people commenting that they've bought or tasted it, and it's beyond just your friends, right?
Right, right. Yeah, it's crazy. It's really taken off. We have, like, you know, those, I'm sure you guys have them too, local Facebook page groups that are like raving about some shop or the other. And then the minute your name gets dropped in there by someone, you kind of become a thing there that people want to try. And so I've had that happen, which was nice. And I did get some business via that way. And then a lot of events, people come buy my macarons, and then now they know me, and now they have my card, and then they reach out and they want, you know, macarons for this or that. Especially being gluten-free, folks really like that, because then they can, it's really easy to get a hold of like a tasty gluten-free treat.
Right. Yeah. So what are your most popular flavors?
People really like citrus, I'll tell you that. So like a raspberry lemon or like an orange vanilla, and then even just a lemon vanilla. I've noticed those sell out so fast. In summer, those ones are huge. In the winter, or fall time, it was like pumpkin spice.
Right.
I did, because of course, everybody's got their Uggs on and they're having their lattes. So I was like, I can do one of those. And then I mimicked my favorite See's candy. I don't know if you've ever had See's candies, but I mimicked one called Scotch Mallow, and it's a chocolate shell with a marshmallow buttercream and a caramel filling in the middle.
Wow.
And that one is pretty popular with a lot of people out here.
When you put the flavoring in, because I know a lot of what you make is pretty, are you coloring it to look like the flavor most of the time? Yeah,
I try to make it look like, you know, kind of like if I'm making a lemon buttercream, the lemon might not really make it all that yellow, but I'll add a little bit of, like, I use an Americolor gel. I just love that one over everything.
That's my favorite.
If I'm doing macarons, because you don't want to add like food coloring drops, because it'll add too much liquid, but a gel is a little bit thicker, so it doesn't, it takes less, so it doesn't really mess with the formula of the macaron.
I've tried lots of different paste colors, and there are other ones that are okay too, but even here, Americolor is an expensive import for me, and I'm still buying it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. It's got to be pretty pricey there. I have probably, I think, like almost every color.
Yeah, I think I'm not sure if I do anymore. I have actually run out of a few. I've still got my original from the very first Americolor I ever bought at an ICES convention in Las Vegas in like 2002, I think. I was walking through this cake show. It was my first ever cake show, and someone came up to me and, with a cup and a bottle, and she said, our super red makes red, not pink. And I just looked at her funny, right? Because I'd used Wilton, whatever. And she goes, try it. Put like one or two drops in this giant cup of buttercream. And I tried it and mixed it. And I was like, I need the biggest possible bottle. So I bought, it's one, of the, where is it? It's around here somewhere. But it's the hugest bottle you could buy. I'm down to about a third of it left.
Oh, gosh. And that starts getting stressful. And you're like, oh, God, I've run out.
Well, because now, to be fair, when I first came to England, I didn't bring it with me. And so I did buy, like, a bottle, a normal-sized bottle, the mid-sized bottle that they have. I bought one of those. And so I have also used that. But, I mean, I make a lot of fake blood. And so there are times I use a big old squirt of Americolor, and it just goes and goes and goes forever.
Right.
Same thing with my Super Black.
Their Super Black is really good too.
Yeah. I mean, because it's so, particularly with a whipped thing.
Yes.
If you were using a not very good black, okay, I don't want to trash Wilton too much, but if you were using Wilton, if you got a whipped thing and you're adding something like a Wilton black, you're getting green. It's going to show how it's actually a green and red combo, because you're going to get, it's going to have that steely green look, not a black look. But Americolor is black.
Right, exactly. It's funny that you say, like, it's a whipped thing, and a lot of people add their food coloring while they're whipping their meringue, because it's just the easiest way to incorporate all the color. But I actually wait. And I add mine to after I've incorporated my almond flour powdered sugar to my meringue a little bit. And that's when I add mine, because I feel like it's more stable.
Oh, okay.
And I have less, like, oopsies that way.
Oh, because it popped in my head. Tell me about hitting the pans, because I've watched you do that.
Tapping those dang pans. So, you know, you take your batter and you put it in a piping bag with a tip and everything. And usually if you're making macarons, you have special either parchment paper, or you have special mats that already have circles on them. So they're very uniform and the shape is great. And I started off, I didn't use any of that. I just did parchment paper. And so if your batter is properly mixed, not over mixed, not under mixed, when you go to pipe it, you're going to need to just flap your pan on the counter or the table or wherever you're sitting, because it could develop a little nipple, and, you know, only people need nipples, not macarons. So make sure you tap that bad boy to get, it brings out the air bubbles and everything. Good way to tell if you've got over mixed meringue is if you pipe it and then it spreads out. Then under mixed is when we tap it and you can't get anything to settle. You can look at it right then and there and know. I usually, if I have a mistake, I can catch it before I even get to baking and waste my time with all that.
Because it is very therapeutic watching you whack those trays.
And it's so loud. My poor kids, they're like, Mom, what is happening in here?
I'm just like, beating the batter.
just getting the nipples to go away. They're like, oh, okay.
Although now for Breast Cancer Awareness Month, I really want you to make some nipply.
Oh, girl, I did bras for the cause, and I totally made boob macarons.
That is awesome.
I did some with like a bra on, I did some without a bra and just two nipples, and I was laughing because I was like, do I really need to tap these nipples out?
Well, so did you tap them out or did you leave them on?
I tapped them out so that I would have a uniform boob look, so I could do a cleavage line and everything in the middle. Otherwise, you can get kind of iffy.
Well, and I guess if it's knocking air out too, then it's giving you the proper consistency of the cookie, right?
Right. And if you don't, you can get these weird, like, little, sometimes you get like an air bubble kind of rising spot in the shell, which just doesn't look as pretty. And I know, like, a lot of people struggle with hollows. That's where the cookie doesn't rise all the way to the top of the shell, and you get, like, this big gap. So I feel like tapping just helps all around with everything.
Cool. And talk a little bit about, well, how do you make them pretty? I mean, other than just the colors, because you don't, it's not just uniform color. You've got your galaxy ones, and you do shaped ones too, right?
I do. Yeah. Like the character ones. So usually I'll look around at pictures. So for Galaxy One, what's a neat way to do like a space look, or I did this with cotton candy, is you lay out a piece of saran wrap, like a pretty long piece, and you just start drizzling. Like, I usually have like three different colors, and let's say, like, it's, I'll do galaxy, let's say it's dark blue, a lighter blue, and a purple. And I just start drizzling first the dark blue, then the light blue, then the purple. And then I just start drizzling more and more, overlapping across and all side by side into like a section, maybe of like 2 inches by like 5. And I just make a big like puddle of all these colors. And then you roll the saran wrap and then you shove it in a piping bag and you just start piping, and all the colors kind of swirl together in this neat little way that's less uniform than doing like a piping bag with one third this color, one third that color, one third this color.
Right. So is that the, what I've seen called the burrito method? And I, cause I do this royal icing, yes, where you put it in the middle and you do the tour. I'm doing it with my hands, which is completely right, useless for an audio podcast, but I'll find there. If anyone wants to do this for anything you pipe, you can put it, look up the burrito method for filling your piping bags. Cause then, yeah, you feed it through down the tip, chop off the end, and you have right, magic mixed colors.
Right. And it looks beautiful. And then for like galaxy, I'll then like let them rest, then I'll bake them. And then once they're out and they're cooled, I'll take like one of my paintbrushes for baking, obviously, one of my food brushes.
Yep.
And I'll get a little bit of white and I'll just fleck it across. So like, you know, you run your, I'm doing it with my hands too.
Yeah.
You run your finger across the brush to make it like splatter,
yeah,
so that it looks like stars. And it's super easy to do and it's pretty fast and it comes out looking pretty cute, not super uniform, which is the best part.
Yeah, I've seen people do like various cake and cupcakey effects where they put either a very liquid buttercream or royal icing in like even neon colors onto a black cake. And yeah, flick like it looks like toothbrush, like a, obviously a clean fresh toothbrush, because then that's right, also a food safe brush,
right?
Because it's a medical safe, it's a medical grade, it's even better than food grade. Right. But you can like do some really cool effects with flick, and I keep meaning to do that. I even bought like a bigger size, because I use a small toothbrush for my actual toothbrushing. I bought like a big one, and it's in the yeah, drawer. It's still in its package, and maybe one day I'll do a flick effect.
Yeah. That's how I do like a galaxy one or a cotton candy. Really, you could do it for anything. If you wanted to do like a pride one, you could do all the rainbow colors. Yeah, that would look pretty cool. So other, I do unicorns, which people like a lot. And so for character shapes, it's really important that they're all the same size. So you kind of draw them out on your paper first. And then you slide that either under parchment or under your mat, that you have to be able to see through it enough. And then you pipe out according to that picture. And it can be tricky, because part of the whole thing with macarons is how you pipe. You just have to make sure you hold your batter in the tip, so it's just straight up and down. Don't tip it or anything to the side like you would when you're actually drawing.
Right.
So that's the hard part. And then a lot of stuff gets done after they're done baking. Like you do the face after you're done baking and stuff like that. I'll use like airbrush paints, even as like food coloring airbrush paint, as like regular paint to paint like the ears and the horn and stuff like that.
Right. Well, because I remember when I met you early on, on Facebook, and I remember right, you working out some Pikachus and
yes,
and seeing your amazing progress going from, I mean, the first ones were clearly Pikachu. But but it was really interesting watching, because you didn't come out the gate making a perfect Pikachu, but as you worked out how to do it, it became much more accurate to the character, and it was right, really cool.
I realized it's hard because, you know, macaron's usually a circle, and so I think I realized with Pikachu, like, you had to do his ears. So I had to pipe his ears. I think that was one thing that I changed, and then I'm totally not a Pokemon person. I didn't grow up like watching any of it. So when I had this order, I was like, goodness, I need to look all this up and I need to start looking at things, because I don't know what any of this really looks like. And so that was tough too. But a lot of the Pikachu and those ones, I use royal icing to decorate with.
But the ears were part of the cookie, right?
The ears were part of the cookie, yeah.
Yeah. And looking, like, I'm looking at your unicorns right now, the you know, rainbow mane that's swooping over, that's cookie?
That's cookie.
Yeah. So that's where the skill's coming in, because, I mean, I don't want to say anyone could decorate on top of it, because obviously that's just a skill that's easier
right,
for
right,
me.
Right, right,
but
it's much easier to color the top than to do the whole cookie. You were correct.
Yeah, because, well, and I've seen, you know, just it seems to be a bit of a trend now, some of these really elaborate macs that people are doing, dragons and stuff, and it's hard for me as someone who hasn't made one to look and tell, particularly if it's, Satin Ice has been sharing a lot of them, and so Satin Ice sharing it, that means there's fondant on the top, that's the point, right? And I'm looking at that going, but how much of that is the fondant and how much is the cookie? Not that either is more valid, just I'm curious as a construct, how do you... I mean, because, like, if a round cookie is normally round and then you put out ears as tip, are they going to brown differently?
Depends on how much your heat is, and if it's too skinny of an area, you're screwed. Like, if you have a really thin area, you do, like, a tail that's too thin, yeah, it's not going to come out right.
Right, so then that is much more significant skill than just, I mean, modeling an ear on, which I'm not denigrating modeling ears, just that...
Right.
Some of these ones, if it's the more cookie it is, this must have to start coming into competitions and stuff, I'm sure. And being graded on that difficulty, yeah.
Right. There are points where, like, to make one macaron, I'll have, like, gosh, maybe 3 to 5 different colors of batter piped in with different various sizes tips. So that I can make it look exactly how it needs to look, because I have to use so many different colors of just the macaron batter.
Okay, and so, because I've never worked with this batter, is it drying out on you? Is there a speed that you have to do, or do you have a lot of time to work with it?
You don't have that much time, because it's a meringue base, right? So if you leave it sitting too long, some people feel like, you know, it can like lose too much air and get too runny. So you kind of have to move quick. But you don't want to go too fast that you mess up.
Right. Okay. I mean, because I have never even made meringues. Again, because I don't want to eat a meringue. It's too sweet for me. So,
oh, yeah.
But I've been seeing these shaped meringues people are doing. I mean, there's, like, this whole Asian trend of, like, super cute little kawaii meringues. And I'm like, I want to do that. But who's going to eat them? Because I can't eat a sugar thing like that.
Right.
But, and I kind of don't want to do it, like, to give to someone else, because I'm going to screw it up because I've never done it before.
Right? You're like, who can I get? I have a neighbor across the street.
Yeah, I have friends who will eat them.
When I first started,
yeah,
I would just walk over there and I'd be like, hi, you got to help taste this.
And they love you, and they can't fit through their door anymore, but they love you.
I bring way too many cookies over to their house. Because she was another home baker, she was honest with me, which is not everyone can be honest, right?
Mm-hmm. That's really important.
So that was nice.
Well, let's get into that home baker thing, because that has not been a fun party for you.
You know, it's been an adventure, as I like to say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's been an adventure. I started off, I'm going to take a big deep breath. so I started off and I'm in California, and of course you have to have a license and you have to have everything. But I was really concerned with, is this even going to be a thing that I can do to make money? I'm going to have to sink like $1,000 into paying for everything. Will it even be a thing I can make money with?
Right.
So I started, I started seeing if I could sell before I even got my permits, just to see if my product was good enough that people would pay for it. And the push that I had came from this group I was in. It was a kitchen group.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all people who would see pictures of what I was making at home. And everyone kept commenting, you need to sell these, you don't understand, like, this is a really hard thing to make, you just need to start selling them. And then my husband was in the hospital and I was sitting there and I was like, no, what, screw it, I'm gonna jump in, I'm gonna do it, both feet, let's go. And I decided in like literally 5 hours of sitting at the hospital with my husband just hanging out that I was gonna go all in and I was gonna see what was gonna happen. And, you know, I kind of used that kitchen group as a guinea pig for a lot of stuff. And I asked them, like, what did they think of my logo? And did it look okay? And what did they think of my name? And, you know, macarons and more, I use a K because my last name's Makris. So it's M-A-K-M-A-K. And it was like, okay, that was cute and clever. And the kitchen group was like so totally helpful with that. And when I rolled out my website, I sent it to them before I posted it anywhere and said, hey, you kitchen food people, tell me what you think of this. Do I need to change anything? Do you catch anything that my eyes aren't catching? Because, you know, I'm a stay-at-home mom. I'm not going to sit there and I don't belong to, like, a bakery business where I can have people, everyone come look. And, you know, my husband's got a job, so he's only available so much. And I think what started happening was people started to get upset, or some people felt some way about something with my stuff. And I got actually a message from admin over there, and they're like, oh, hey, you can't post pictures anymore of your macarons. And only if there's a mistake, and only then you can, or if you get tagged to help people. But they didn't want to see any more of my stuff because I was now technically also in business, which sucked because I looked at that group as like, okay, you guys are like family because I'm literally walking through this with you guys. We birthed a business literally in this group, and now I can't even post about it. One really knew. That was the hard part.
And they weren't going to be the customers either. That was the thing.
Yeah, no, I wasn't selling to anybody in there.
You weren't posting ads.
Yeah, no, I wasn't marketing in there. I was just more trying to be like, hey, can I get your opinions? Because a lot of us in that group did have businesses and did do this for work. Whether or not they were out in the group about it is another story.
Yeah.
A few weeks later, probably like a month later, I got really upset, and I had posted a picture because I finally had a macaron that went south. So I was so excited because I could finally post a picture of one of my macarons that didn't work out. In the background was one of my boxes, and it got reported in a sub-thread comment because you could see the boxes with my logo on it. That just really was over the top for me because it was in the background. I wasn't intentional. It was in a sub-thread comment to someone, and it just felt like someone was hunting for me to make mistakes on this. So I get a message from an admin, and then I go to another group that's got mutual people in it, and I just was asking, like, hey, you know, I'm super frustrated. This is what's going on in this kitchen group I'm in. And then it turns out there was a lot of overlap, and a lot of people were very surprised to hear that's what was going on. And I was kind of encouraged to go talk over there and see if we can make changes for other people, which I did. I brought it up. So I was commenting, like, rapid fire on this thread because I was so scared that admin were going to shut it down. Mm-hmm. And I was going to not be allowed to have my voice, which was really hard for me. And they made some changes, and all of this stuff happened, and I ended up actually ultimately leaving the group because it wasn't what I thought it was to me.
Yeah.
And they were all down with me pouring in emotional labor and helping other people, but they didn't really want to give anything back to me.
That's why I left. Right. At the point where they said, someone like me who has a blog that has my own recipes, that if someone asks, I need a recipe for X, I could share 5 in a row from other blogs, but not share mine, which I'd been doing all the whole time. In fact, I rarely shared mine because I actually don't have that many recipes, but I have a lot of cataloged recipes I keep in an Evernote file. So if someone says, I need a recipe for this, I'm just pulling someone else's blog. So they were totally okay with I could have pulled your blog. I could have pulled someone else's blog. But if we posted our own, even not as an ad, I don't even sell ads on my blog. There's no profit to be made. When they said that's not good enough, I'm like, so wait a minute. You want me as an expert to come in, answer people's questions, but I can't even mention my own recipe? That's not okay. And their reaction was not good.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And for me, the cherry on top was asking, I had asked them if I could go live to troubleshoot for someone. I was literally like, okay, I'm going to make a whole batch of macarons. I'll go live and I'll help you through what you're making. And they told me no. And that was when I realized it wasn't really the place for me. And I'm sitting here trying to, why am I pouring myself into something that I'm literally not getting anything back from now? So then I left the group and I carried on and I worked my butt off, and I hit the holiday season rush, and the next thing I know, January 3rd, I get a cease and desist letter, which was interesting. And if you went back to the dates of when it was filed through the state, someone had reported me, it was that same, those same days that stuff went down in that group.
Yeah.
Which is sucky, because that means that somebody from that group reported me to the state, because that's where they felt they should do. Which was fine. I went and I got legal right away. I actually had to fight some battles because I live within 100 feet of another licensed home baker. So they denied me at first. And then luckily I could talk my way out of a paper bag and I got it. But it was definitely not what I thought would happen. And I'm still in some groups, I still have repercussions, and people are still, anytime I post, I'll, you know, I get nervous. Oh, I'm posting about my macarons, I'm getting nervous. And people ask me questions left and right, and they want to know, and no one's allowed to ask me if I can ship, which I can't, so they can ask all they want, but if someone asks, then they're automatically like, oh, well, you're marketing.
Yeah, if someone else asks you.
Right.
That's, yeah, and that's, again, if they want to have a rule that says no marketing, I'm down with that, because I've seen groups go south really fast. There are some cake groups where all it is everyone shouting about their classes at each other and no one's actually buying anything, right? Right. So I get that, but it shouldn't be your fault that someone asks, especially if the answer is no, I didn't. Right.
Like, oddly, I'm not trying to, like, compare it to any, like, victim blame, but it felt like you're coming into the victim, blaming the victim for something that's happening to them.
Yeah.
Like, I have no control over what those other people are doing whenever they do something, but I'm being held accountable for other people's decisions. And that felt wrong to me. And I just had something happen because I posted a picture with a watermark on it. And a month ago, I posted a picture of an entire event with my logo splashed everywhere on my shirt, on my table, everywhere. And that post was fine. But this post with my tiny little watermark on it was not okay.
Yeah, the inconsistency.
It's just overwhelming. Yeah. And it's just so exhausting.
Yeah, but I mean, we became friends out of this whole fiasco, so there's
we
that.
Did. We did. By going, what is going on?
We were hard messaging in the background going, this isn't okay! Exactly. Then back to the public post.
What is happening?
Yeah, that's right.
But I feel like it was the right move to become legal, because then I could sell at events and I could do this and that, and I didn't have to worry about it. And I was planning to do it January anyways. So it was like, you know, I'd done 2 months without my license and stuff. And I was just waiting for January and I was going to do it. And so it was just, man, someone was displeased with me.
But the thing is, that's actually really common. I mean, I would say the majority of cakers and cookiers I know, the first things they sold, there was no license.
Right. I feel like that's pretty common. I mean, one of my home bakers in my area was floored that someone found out that fast, because she told me she did it for 2 years before she went legit in the same city. So she was just floored. And I was laughing, because I was like, well, I guess I'm that important.
Are you in the middle of a big project right now? Are you at that dreaded point halfway along where everything looks all weird and the faces aren't quite human and the animals look like the wrong species, or you haven't covered up the seams, or there's some other part that, because it's not done yet, just looks wrong? Are you exhausted and asking yourself why? Why are you even engaged in this art form? Because you just want to go do something else, but this project is making you hate sugar? Well, remember, we've all been there. Everyone in this industry has been where you are right now, and we will all be there again. The midpoint of any project stinks. You've put in so much time and so much work, but still have so far to go, and there are a dozen other things you'd rather do right now. We all understand. But come on now. We also know how awesome you're going to feel at the end of this thing.
whatever you're making is going to be amazing. You are going to put that last piece on and stand back and be so happy with what you've accomplished. Because yeah, it's hard, but that's what makes it worthwhile in the end. So take a break if you need to, but keep on going because you rock. You are awesome. You are an artist, and this is your latest masterpiece. Woohoo! You go! You do it! You keep slogging through it, and we are all cheering you on. Yeah!
California is a particularly, you know, not one of the easiest states to get licensing in.
No, it was a hot mess. It was, yeah, I had to meet with the head planner of the city and fight my case, which luckily I could do. But I just imagine people who can't fight their case, they get denied. And that probably sucks. Because then what? Now you really can't do anything. And they know you're on their list.
Yeah, right? Or if you just don't have the fighting spirit, or maybe you're trying to do this because you're coming out of one bad situation and the last thing you need is another kick in the teeth to knock you down.
Right.
And you may not think that you can fight. I mean, we have people in this world who think that they're not allowed to fight, particularly women are taught we're not allowed to fight. So, yeah, that's a huge pile added on to the stress of doing it. I mean, okay, so tell me more about this. You couldn't do it because someone else lived close. What's their rationale for that?
In our city, if there is another licensed home baker within 100 feet, property line to property line, not kitchen to kitchen or anything like that, property line to property line, you do not get to do it. So I knew that the girl across the street from me had a business. So it was going to be tricky. I knew that they could tell me no right off the bat. But I had this letter from them. So I just was like, all right, well, let's see if I can get an exception or something. There has to be a way to do this. And I went in and I just kept track of who I talked to, when I talked to them. And I kept track of everything. So I literally would take a picture. So I had like a timestamp photo with like when and where I did what. And I made it from, I went to City Hall and they authorized me to go to the county. And then I went to the county, and the county, you have to start paying money at that point.
Right.
So, and I have the paperwork from the city, so they start taking my money, and I'm noticing everywhere I see, like, no refunds, no exceptions, da da da. And I'm like, shoot, man, this better work.
Yeah.
Because now I'm selling out real money. I go from one part of the health department to another. And then they're like, okay, now you go back to the city and you get this done, and then you meet with our health department guy. Well, then when I went back to the city and I filed my paperwork and I paid them money, which they accepted and everything, I get a call saying, we've declined your permit. You're not getting it. And that was when I was like, wait a minute, because you should have stopped me at my very first hump when I came in. You guys should have realized by looking at my address that you knew someone was close by. So I requested a meeting with the person that said no. The woman that was talking to me was like his assistant or whatever. So I said, you know, I'd like to talk with the person that said no and see if I can understand better where this is all going, right? And I went in there, and he was the head of city planning, and he was the right person to talk to. And he just said, okay, I just want to hear your side of the story. And luckily, I painted the picture just like I did for you. I started here, and then they gave me this, then I went there, and then... And then, you know, I said, I can't find anywhere on any website where it tells me who has a home business in our city. So right. How am I supposed to know, unless I know the people in my neighborhood that well, how do I know that there's not one next door or across the street? I didn't tell him that I knew she was doing it first because I didn't think he needed to know that. But I wanted him to realize there were holes. I said, on the paperwork you have me fill out, there's one spot that says for employee use only. I didn't read that section because it says employee use only. And in there is where it states that we can't be within 100 feet of somebody that's running a business. So I wouldn't even know that because I don't even read that part because it says employee use only.
Mm-hmm.
And then I cited the fact that I had spent all this money. And then he just looked at me and he goes, you know what? You fought your case and I'm giving you an exception. We never do it. And you deserve this because these people should have known ahead of time before they even let you go. You got to stop here because this is a situation. And he said, you know, you're showing me loopholes in my entire process. which was, I mean, sorry for the next guy who can't talk their way out of this.
Or maybe they fixed that problem, but yeah.
Right. Well, and he said, you know, I took a look at your street, and the whole reason why we want this is because we don't want too much street parking. And I said, well, I hardly ever have people come pick up at my house. Oftentimes, I transport to where people are, and our street is very wide and very long. And he's like, yeah, I saw that, so I'm not super concerned with a flood of traffic. And I was like, no, there's not going to be a flood of traffic.
That's the rationale. Okay, because, you know, honestly, I'm a little bit suspicious of that as the rationale. I remember there was a... It was either This American Life or Planet Money, one of those NPR podcasts. They were on about the sort of the quid pro quo that sometimes comes between communities and small businesses. The small businesses will get themselves the law that makes it legal to do what they're doing, but then put in a rider that prohibits competition. And I think the particular podcast was something to do with hairstyling or you know, beauty, cosmetics, or something like that. But it was basically saying, okay, we get the law, so it's legal for us to do all this hair stuff, but now the law also says no one else can come and compete with us. And so I'm very suspicious about laws like that, that right. It's an anti-competitive bit of nonsense. The parking thing seems a little bit... U.S. streets are enormous. I'm sorry, it's just not... That doesn't...
Well, that's the thing, is our street is so wide. I could probably fit, like, gosh.
You could fit two British streets on it.
Yeah, it's not a narrow street, and it's very long, and he said, do I see a lot of people coming and going from the house across from me? And I was like, God, no, maybe like twice a week, and so that helped a lot, and he just said, he's like, I want to surf, he asked me, he's like, I'm going to make a copy of your, because I had my timeline written out with dates and times when I did everything, and he's like, I want to take a copy of that and put it in your file, I want to take a copy of this, put it in my file. And I took a lot of my evidence that I brought in with me. I was like, look, I did everything right.
Yeah. I mean, it's good that he listened, because I feel like they often don't listen to us.
So. No, a lot of times they don't. But I do feel like being a, I don't know, a very persuasive individual helps me a lot. Maybe it's those semesters of debate in college, but.
Well, some of us just have a don't mess with me vibe.
Yeah, you know, I have half my head shaved, and I think that kind of sends a message in itself.
I mean, I used to be, in my youth, such a doormat that people wouldn't even recognize me. I used to really let people walk over me, and then sometime in my 20s, I got really angry. And so by the time I hit my 30s, I had no more, you know, Fs left to give, and now I'm 46, and it's like, really? Are we going to do this? Because I'm going to hurt you if we're doing it. And by hurt, I mean, like, I'm still a pacifist, but you know what I mean? Like, I think some of us...
I'm going to verbally wrap you around this pole.
Let's watch
how this goes. Right, yes.
Yeah, it just reached a point where... Particularly, again, as women, we kind of hit a point in our lives where it's like, okay, we can either stay the doormat the world has wanted us to be, or we're done, and we're going to take everybody with us.
Right. And, I mean, my mom raised me very young. I can remember her being like, you have to speak up for yourself because no one else is going to do it for you.
Yeah.
And I think much to her dismay that now I still am that way, even with her.
See, I was raised... sit down, shut up, and behave. And I eventually, once I got out of my house and was actually physically safe to do so, I, you know, mentally rebelled first. But that's what I'm saying. Like, it took this process. And now you better believe I'm raising my daughters.
Right.
The way that I'm just like, even the other day I was telling my 13-year-old, this is the sad reality. This is how people are going to be. It's not okay. It's not fair. It's not right. But you need to be prepared for it.
Right. And there's a certain point where... Yes, you can be a kind person and not be like a jerk and respect people, but also you deserve that back. And if that's not given back, then that's when you have to start, you know, analyzing, well, how am I going to approach this?
Yeah, you can be kind without being a doormat.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. I've been posting about this a lot lately. We are all worth defending.
Right.
And self-defense is legit. And if someone doesn't like what you're doing because you're defending yourself, I mean, it's not always their problem, because in this case... If he had not liked that you were defending yourself, it was still going to be your problem.
Right.
And at some point, like, I mean, where would you have given up? Like, could you have gone over his head and over that? I mean, this is what was happening with when I left Texas to move here. And we just got a Baker's bill passed. They're doing it again now. I'm not even sure what's going on because I haven't been following the news. But the woman who primarily got the Texas Baker bill through, she'd been doing it for years before I even moved to Texas. And the nonsense and abuse she took at all levels, and she just kept, nevertheless, she persisted.
Right.
Exactly. And she just hammered it through and hammered it through and hammered it through and got more and more of us on board. I really appreciate what she did, and I never want to have to do it.
Right. No. No, thank you. There's only so many spoons I have to do some of this stuff.
Yeah, and it's like, and I honestly, I probably should look up why it's going on again, but I've been seeing my Texas baker friends posting again about needing to support a baker's bill, and I've just been too busy here with other nonsense delve into something that I can't even vote on that. I can vote at state and federal level, but I can't even vote on municipal level stuff anymore, so it's like, really? I'm sorry, I just can't. Maybe I should have Kyla come back on and explain what's going on with the Texas baker's bill. But yeah, if you don't have baker's bill, you can't have a bake sale. You can't have a lemonade stand for a little kid. And it's, yeah.
Right. Which is just so hard. And at some point we have to say, like, you know, hey, how far is too far? I get we want to be safe.
Yeah. There's safe. Like, okay. When we were doing it in Texas, because people would try and ride on it, right? So you'd get like the people who were at the farmer's markets who were trying to push the raw milks and stuff. They wanted to ride on, and we were like, no. We're doing shelf-stable cakes. Don't put raw milk in other stuff. Like, if that's legit and that's your thing, fine. But that's opening up the cakers to the world of pain of food poisoning that shouldn't be on them. Because if you're getting food poisoning from a cake, you've really done something wrong.
You've really had to work at that.
Yeah. That's like, I mean, it takes a good week at room temperature for a cake to get moldy. Right. Depending on your humidity, et cetera. Or cookies. I mean, even, you know, your sugar cookies. I have sugar cookies that are samples that are like 10 years old and they're not moldy. I mean, no one's eating them.
Right.
Ew, like, gross. I wouldn't want to eat them. But like, they're kind of self-preserving if you just keep them out of humidity. So, yeah, there's no need to attach a raw milk product on a rider to that.
Seriously. And, like, you know, the trouble with not being able to ship. It's like, okay, California, you already have me using non-perishable items. Let me ship them.
Yeah, why can't you do they have a rationale for that?
It's actually not them, and apparently it's above them.
Is this an interstate commerce clause?
I didn't dive in. Mm. I just know that it was, they said it was federal level, where I think only two states you can ship in. With just a regular...
Yeah, I mean, because I always get suspicious that it could be the Interstate Commerce Clause, because for anyone who doesn't understand anything in American politics, in fact, so like the stuff that's been going on lately with the states putting stuff on choice rights and stuff like that, a lot of that stuff is going to get challenged under interstate commerce, because if there's one thing the American government holds holier than anything else, it's the Interstate Commerce Clause.
Oh, got it.
Yeah, so, like, there's environmental law that only gets to exist because someone argued it under interstate commerce.
Right.
So, yeah, I wonder if it's one of those things, like, because, especially if some other state has been given the, you're allowed to ship, so no other state can now?
Right.
Okay, so now, you are licensed, you're not allowed to ship, but you're doing all your local events, and so, after all of this, is it paying off?
Yes, it is. So my whole goal is to be able to pay my car payment that I'll eventually have. Right now, my Suburban's old and paid off. But once that starts, then I'll be able to just pay it off with the business. And I think I'm at that point now.
Oh, that's good.
So that's pretty good. And, you know, it's nice that I don't have to have childcare and I don't have to take my kids anywhere. I can do it all at home. So it's all, it's paying off.
That's good. I mean, because that all after all the drama, knowing that it succeeded is like, yay!
Right? Exactly. Yeah. Like, thank goodness.
So you're going to just keep chugging along with it then?
Yeah. I'm just going to keep chugging and see where this goes. And maybe someday I'll go to a commercial kitchen. Maybe I won't.
Well, because, yeah, that's a whole another level of headache. And like you said, now you have to worry about what do you do with your kids when you're there. And, yeah. Yeah, that's
exactly.
Hard.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's a whole other level. And maybe I wait to do that until the baby goes to school and I can go cook in a commercial kitchen when they're at school and all that good stuff.
Right. Okay, so we'll link to your website in the show notes, but where else would you like people to follow you?
So I have an Instagram, which is @macarons and more. And then I have a Facebook at the same one. And I probably update my Instagram the most, but I'm not fabulous at it. I need to get better.
Well, it's okay. But so if someone is local and wants to buy stuff, that's where it, and I guess if they want to come get your free advice, they can hit you up on Facebook.
Exactly. That's the way to find me.
Okay, excellent. Well, I will let you go to the children who have desperately wanted your attention since the moment you started taking a phone call, because that is what parenthood is. But thank you so much for coming on.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you soon. Right. Bye.
Okay, all right.
Well, lovely listeners, that's it for the show for a few weeks, because as I've mentioned in recent episodes, I'm going to take some time this summer to focus on skill building, family time, and who knows, maybe I'll even get around to making shoe pastry. I'll be back in September with more episodes, and I'll also be planning 2020 schedule in the next month or so, so if you want to be on the podcast next year, then get in touch soon. In the meantime, I know a lot of my friends, both in and outside of the sugar arts world, are feeling very anxious about the state of affairs of the wider world right now. So I want to leave you with a few words of encouragement. And again, this isn't a political podcast, but frankly, putting innocent people, especially children, into concentration camps shouldn't even be political. It's just sick and wrong. I know a lot of people are really struggling with wanting to help, but don't have the faintest idea of how to do so. So, to my American friends in particular who want to put their baking skills towards some good, well, you can't donate cakes to those kids in the camps. They're not even letting humanitarian aid groups bring in soap and toothbrushes. You can't bring them a cake. You can, however, bring baked goods to a protest. If you live close to one of the camps, there's almost certainly a protest going on, and you can bring cookies or cupcakes or whatever to help boost everyone there. If you're not close to one, you can have a bake sale, assuming it's legal in your state, and raise money for one of the law or medical groups that are going into the camps to help the victims and expose the horrors. If you fly a lot for cake shows, there are groups that are taking donations of air miles so they can keep sending lawyers to the camps. And if that whole thing is just overwhelming, remember there are also groups like Bake-A-Wish and Icing Smiles that do accept donations of decorated cakes for kids in abuse shelters or hospitals. So when the big issues of the day are hammering on your heart, and you feel like you just want to make a cake for a kid in need, check out Bake-A-Wish or Icing Smiles and get involved in your local group doing that. And if you don't have a local branch, both of those groups will help you set one up. There are versions of those all over the world too, so Google for those words in your area, Bake-A-Wish and Icing Smiles. We do a lot of work alone in our kitchens, and the weight of the world can sometimes make us despair in that isolation. So remember that you can reach out to your community in so many ways to spread the joy and beauty of your sugar art to a lot of people in real need. None of us knows what's going to happen with this ugly nonsense next, but we sugar artists can at least put our mark against it in lots of ways. And remember, you're not alone, because everyone involved with this podcast is on your side too. We are a community based on love and happiness, and we can rise up in that spirit in these small ways that come together to make a real difference in so many lives. So until I talk to you again in September, keep making your amazing edible art, keep shoulder to shoulder united with the other good folks in our world, and we'll all bake against the darkness together.
This has been the Eat the Evidence podcast. A warm thanks to all of my contributors, and you can find out more about them and the things discussed on today's episode in the show notes by visiting the podcast section of the Eat the Evidence website, eat-the-evidence.com/podcast. There, you'll find social media links, as well as links to iTunes, Stitcher, and other places where you can subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. I've also posted detailed instructions on how to leave me a Facebook voicemail message and other options to call into the show. Please do feel free at any time to call in your very own cake formation, funny story, talk about a challenge you're having or have recently overcome, or rant about something driving you crazy. And if you like the show, please post a review on iTunes and share it with all of your sugar artist friends. This show was produced and edited by me, Kimberly Chapman. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, you are an amazing artist, and everyone involved with this podcast supports you. You can do it! Until next time, bye-bye, and good luck with whatever you're working on.
People need nipples, not macarons.